grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 331 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. Chris Jordan, your host here, coming to you live from Austin, Texas still, but soon to not be. I have gigs on the supposed books. We will see soon confirmations, but it seems like some of the world has started rebooting. We'll see. Once again, numerous shows hopefully coming up, but as of right now, still coming to you right here live. We don't intend to stop our live feeds. We don't intend, things may be a little bit changed in the way that they're done whenever I'm on the road, but we've started this process with you guys and we love this process with you guys. It's been absolutely great to be able to show you guys the articles on screens, people's websites, books, declassified government documents, to be able to share things with y'all like the amazing new Curious Realm website. Stop on by, check it out, CuriousRealm.com. I'm going to give y'all a challenge. Every week, whenever the show starts, hop onto Google and just Google Curious Realm. That's all you have to do. You don't have to go visit the website. You don't have to do anything. Just type the words Curious Realm into your Google platform. I literally just interviewed like one of the world's leading SEO guys for one of my other podcasts, and he was like, just do that before your launch, like regularly, and have other people do it. You'd be surprised what that does for you. I was like, oh, all right, call to action. So there you have it. Stop on by, check that out. If you like all the documents, everything else, check out CuriousRealm.com. While you are online checking that out, make sure to stop on by our awesome sponsor, True Hemp Science. I'm a user of True Hemp Science. I was actively prescribed CBD by my doctor a few years ago as a supplemental for my anxiety. And it was odd that about a month later, I found Christopher Lynch, the owner of True Hemp Science, at a local farmer's market. And I've been to dispensaries all around the country, as you folks know. And True Hemp Science is by far my favorite CBD product that I have found. They are absolutely amazing. All made from a, like, spigeric process, like an alchemical process of destroying everything, using the parts that are left and using the whole plant to do it. So absolutely great stuff. Stop on by there. Dude7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% on your order of $50 or more and get two free 25 milligram edibles. TrueHemScience.com. Dude7 is the code. While you're online, make sure to stop on by and visit the Dudes and Beer group on Facebook. That's where we post all the articles. That's where the conversations happen. We have it's funny because the Dudes and Beer group has been well above 500 members before, and then politics happened in the world and some people didn't enjoy truly, truly open discussion. And we drop down and we just pop back up over 500. But it's absolutely great to see people posting articles, people having open conversations about the world, things like demonology, stuff like that. So that is where we actively pull and post all of the Dudes and Beer news of the week. Stop on by and check it out there. Just a few of our headlines today. Out of Yahoo News, as many as 200 Americans have now reported possible symptoms of the, quote, Havana syndrome. This is, of course, that interesting syndrome that they said didn't exist, that they said was a toxin used to kill crickets. Then they said was the active crickets, not the toxin used to kill them. All kinds of stuff. But we'll be, of course, covering that with John Hall and Dr. Robert Duncan. China's experimental space plane aces its flight tests. That out of spacedaily.com. Jerusalem Post has Israeli lab. Some existing drugs could stop COVID at almost 100%. And it's pretty interesting. They are not releasing a full list yet because they've still yet to medically verify all that. But there are a couple of them that they were like, yep. There was also recently a study done where if you had the cold, then caught COVID, you're pretty much all good. It was pretty wild. That's posted in here as well. Fizz.org, 15,000-year-old viruses discovered in Tibetan glacier ice. I'm sure that won't be a problem. YahooNews.com, Canada reopens its borders to fully vaccinated Americans starting August 9th. But, man, you better not ask one of us to wear a mask. I'm just playing. seriously, go on by, check out the Dudes and Beer Group on Facebook. That's where you can find everything. That's where you can tune into the episodes every week. While you're there, you can also stop on by the Dudes and Beer podcast, dudesandbeer.com. That's where you can listen live as well. Our guest this evening, Nathaniel Gillis. He is the author of the book, A Moment Called Man. And we will be talking to him about the study of demonology, what demonology is, demons in our real world, in our world today. Some of you may be like, but Chris, I'm not a religious or a spiritual person, so take your demons and shove it. All right, fair enough. We'll be finding out from Nathaniel if that's actually something that is valid or not, because you may not realize all that there is to know about the classical daemon, D-A-E-M-O-N, which is where we pull all of that from. We'll be getting into all that and more with our guest, Nathaniel Gillis, author of the book, A Moment Called Man, right after this message from our sponsors. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultational workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code DUDES20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. I command the unclean spirit, whoever so thou art, along with all thine associates, excuse me, who have taken possession of this servant of God, that by the mysteries of the incarnation, passion, resurrection, and descension of our Lord Jesus Christ, by the descent of the Holy Spirit, by the coming of our Lord unto judgment, thou shalt tell me by some sign or other name, and the day and the hour of thy departure. I command thee moreover to obey me to the letter. I, who though unworthy am a minister of God, neither shalt thou be emboldened to harm in any way this creature of God, nor the bystanders, nor any of their possessions. That is the beginning of the rite of the Roman rituals, rite of exorcism, at least according to Vatican I. This is an original Latin-English version of that. That is the classical understanding of the concept of demon. That's what most people have in their mind is this horned, leather-winged bat creature that is looking to feast upon their spiritual energy by force. And most of that comes from the religious definition and the dichotomy of good and evil. However, if you look up things like Britannica, things like that, angel and demon, also spelled daemon, respectively, any benevolent or malevolent spiritual being that mediates between the transcendent and temporal realms. That's something that a lot of people do not realize. That's what we're getting in today. Nathaniel, welcome, welcome, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. It's good to be here. I'm very good. It's very, very good. And I'm glad to be on the show. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. This is a topic of discussion, as you could tell in our pre-show conversation, that I am more than enthused about. I myself love the topic of demonology and the concept. I mean, even the whole construct of good and evil, and that classic dichotomy brought to us by Zoroaster, things like that, being brought into the modern realm. But like we were just saying, so many people do not realize that classical definition, where it's almost like the concept of jinn in Middle Eastern tradition and Moravian tradition, where they're these almost mischievous spirits that could be good, could be bad in the same bottle.
Right. Yeah, you're right. You're right. They could be. You know, I think it's important to not just research this, but go to the ancient origins. I mean, you know, we can deal with the definitions. And what I realized, you know, growing up in theology and growing up a church and all that, was that the evangelical definition, even the Catholic definition of a demon, doesn't really fit the phenomenon.
Yeah.
The phenomenon itself is larger than life. And even if we go back into our history, you know, even the word demon, it has two definitions. It could be a messenger, or it could mean to divide destinies, which is very fascinating. But when I was researching this as a kid and growing up in it, it didn't really take too long before I realized, okay, you know, a lot of our ancestors did experience something that was genuine, but they begin to use their descriptions of the events to define what they were experiencing. And I think that's what really, really evolved into this concept of horns and hooves and the legend of fallen angels being demons. I'm sure that we're going to get into it tonight, but I can prove to you throughout scripture that these fallen angels are not, like, they're not, you know, they're formerly human beings. They're not just horns and hooves that fell from some Mount Olympus. And I'll shut up.
Well, let's,
that's all I got to say about that.
That's no. About all I have to say about that.
Yes, yeah, right, yeah.
That is no better a Forrest Gump moment than any other in the world.
That's right. But that's all I got to say about that.
But before we really jump off that cliff, that's far beyond jumping a shark. That's literally jumping off a cliff of,
yes, sir,
research and information and history not that is necessarily lost, but that it seems like even our world religions just really don't want to talk about anymore.
Correct.
And we'll be getting into that. But before we do, let's get into you, Nathaniel. Right. How did you get into this? Because once again, as I said in our pre-conversation, demonology is a deep field. That's I mean, it's not like you were like, you know, I think I'm gonna go to culinary school.
Cook up some demons.
I really like making steak.
Yeah.
what was it? I mean, that's one of those that, like, no, I don't think that people really get into the seminary with the click mentality of, I'm gonna go be an exorcist.
Correct.
You know, so how was it that you went down the literal spiritual rabbit hole of demonology?
Okay, so there were three things going on simultaneously as a kid, you know. So the very first thing that happened to me was my parents decided to move out of their house and buy a new house. And we went to go tour this new house. And while we were in the house, my dad said, you know, he goes, this is going to be your future room if we actually buy the home. He says, so take a look around, figure out where you're going to put your gaming system, your bed and everything. He said, your mother and I are going to go talk to the realtor in the kitchen. And so I'm looking around the room, and I can still remember when I first walked in, I could smell what to me as a kid, it smelled like sulfur. But I guess the best description would be a rancid stench of rotting flesh. It hit me like a wind. It wasn't like I walked into it. No, I felt it walk into me. And when it did, I smelled it and I thought, oh my God, like there's something wrong with this room. I definitely don't want to move in the house, and I definitely don't want to, you know, I don't want to stay in this room if we do move in. So when I went in the room, I'm looking around, and I was drawn into the corner, and there was a bed there. And for some unknown reason, I knelt down and I opened, picked up the little blanket and pulled it up. And when I did, I was met face to face with a full bodied apparition of a pale faced little girl. She had to have been about 6 years old. She had long black hair. And when we looked at each other, it was as if she was as frightened as I was. She instantly recoiled and shimmied her body all the way to the back of the wall, to where, like, she was the furthest from me. So later on that night, you know, we're on the way home, and I'm asking my dad how it went. And he asked me, you know, what do you think about the room? What do you think about the house? I said, well, I said, I think there's something in it. And I told him about my experience. He kind of laughed it off. He's like, well, you know what? He goes, maybe it's, you know, maybe you imagine it, or maybe it's a dream, or, you know, whatever. I'm like, no, that was a real experience. You know, I'm not crazy. That's literally what happened.
Yeah.
Come to find out that the people that owned the house were elderly, and when they died, it was an estate sale. And so, you know, they didn't have a 6 year old girl. So, you know, once we actually moved in the house, I got to know the neighbors. I got to know more stories about the house. And, you know, come to find out that house was haunted. And upon moving in, the longer I stayed there, the more this malevolent spirit mutated. So it was no longer a little girl. It mutated into shadow figures. There was one night I was playing a video game at night, and I looked in the corner of my room, and there was a window, and I saw something just move. Like, I couldn't decipher what it was, and then I fixed my eyes on it. And once my eyes adjusted to the darkness, I could see a full body. It was literally a shadow figure that was 7 feet tall, and it was just staring at me. And then it tilted its head, and then I went screaming to my parents. So, you know, that was my introduction, or my confrontation with this species of apocalyptic evil. And then at the same time, I was attending a local church body that was telling me what I was going through wasn't real, and that, you know, that either I was crazy or I needed to go get help. So that's really what drove me into this field. It's definitely not a curiosity. It's a calling.
Yeah.
These entities will victimize people who want to be rubbernecks and say, you know what? That's really cool. Let me go find something. No, that's not what needs to happen. I mean, these entities, they play by their rules. And we're just now trying to understand
that. Well, and you know, that I think that was probably, I get a lot of press kits, let's just say. You know, I get a lot of prep sheets from guests. I even have my own prep sheets that I send to people, you know. But that was one of the most interesting quotes in your prep sheet, was the idea that we don't understand the rules because they're playing by a totally different game.
They are. And it's absolutely horrifying.
And a lot of that game, so to speak, I think comes down to, once again, that classical dichotomous definition that we're looking for between angel and demon.
Correct. Correct.
Which allows them to not play on us in so many ways. So many ways. You know, think if it was like a sleazy guy trying to go out with your sister, you know, and you kept being like, you know, it's something about that dude just ain't right.
Exactly. and you know what the most terrifying aspect of this is?
Go with
just go with it, man. Just go with it. You know, we don't even know what their morality is. You know, that's the biggest issue here. I could tell you this much. Once I started researching the paranormal, I realized very quickly that the Catholic Church is wrong. Not in terms of just, you know, their idea of the paranormal, but their exorcistic rite, the holy water, comes out of Numbers 19:11. I've told you this before in the pre-interview. You know, this is not about horns and hooves and about fallen angels or even pitchforks. This is about disincarnate consciousness. In Numbers 19:11, this the entire idea of throwing holy water on the possessed comes from people who come into contact with disincarnate consciousness. I'm getting passionate. Sorry.
It's all right. It's okay.
But, you know,
this show's all about being passionate, my man. Never apologize for that on here.
Okay. But yeah, it's disincarnate consciousness. So in my research with respect to the exorcist of Red, I always thought, man, you know, why did this work? How does it work? Where did this come from? And I realized that the Catholic Church has based the legitimacy of their exorcistic rite on the rate of success and not on the reason for it.
Yeah.
And so they think, oh my God, because it's working, our theology must be right. No, their theology is wrong. Their demonology is wrong. You're not dealing with horns and hoofs. You're dealing with consciousness. And that's why they're cleansing people from, you know, corpse pollution. So yeah. I think that was really a head turner for me. That's when I really started to think, oh my God, this phenomenon itself needs to be better understood. And not only that, but the evangelical movement, you know, your Protestant, all that. We all need to expand our idea of this because in many cases, I think we're wrong.
Well, and because once again, we're dealing with that post-Zoroastrian concept of good versus evil, the dichotomy of both of them stemming from the same root. The whole concept, even if you go back and please feel free, I don't care. I'm gonna back this page up just a second so that people can see all the different versions you can choose. I tend to go for like New American, maybe even New Jerusalem, mainly because those tend to use the original Coptic, or not Coptic, but the original Hebrew text, the original Greek text, things like that.
Exactly right.
Instead of a translation of a translation. If you're translating any Bible from Latin, that is woefully bad. You're literally like trying to tell a Japanese joke to somebody in Mexico.
Oh my God. Yeah. And the language barrier is profound. Yeah. I mean, imagine, you know, I was married to a Colombian girl, and it was so interesting because I was talking to her one day, and her mother speaks fluent Spanish, and I'm like, you know, I'm trying to tell her what it means to eat your heart out, right? She didn't know what it meant. She took it literally, right? That's how the language barrier, right? It's really bad.
Yeah.
Like, so we have to understand that. Yeah, you're exactly right. But getting back to the corpse pollution concept.
Yes.
That's why the exorcistic rite works. That's why it's successful. And again, if we're gonna, because I know you're now. Here's a question: can your listeners see what you're doing right now?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, they can also what you're seeing is what they see.
Yes. Okay. Cool. Let's dive into this chapter. Actually,
absolutely.
Let's look at what's called sympathetic magic.
Yep.
This is how I know these entities perform magic, because Yahweh is giving the Levitical priesthood a ritual, an antidote to a sin they didn't commit. Oh my God, this is going to get good. Now, it talks about the holy water and how you have to baptize them and all that stuff. But even more than that, it talks about how they're going to burn the red heifer, they're going to burn the ashes, mix it with water, and then they're going to drink it. Now, let's look at the symbology here. Let's look at the imagery. If you have something red and you drink it, that's what he's talking about. Now, in the law of sympathetic magic works because someone levels a curse on another person, and that person also levels an antidote to that curse. But in the antidote, it carries the curse in it itself, right? That's how it's reversed. And so your rabbi has not only said that we're dealing with corpse pollution, but we're also dealing with entities that will eat blood. Oh my God, right? That's the symbology and the imagery. So what we're dealing with here, again, it's not just possession, but we're dealing with what I call the commandeering of consciousness.
All right. And
yes.
And that's something that we had talked about before numerous times with our good friend Archbishop James Cloud. The idea, we were talking about it before the show, the idea that not necessarily are a lot of people possessed demoniacally, But right. in that sense of Father Malachi Martin, they are more to the point of spiritual obsession, which is the point Correct. Where you have relinquished some sort of control over your free will, be it through, Yes. Hey, ask James Cloud, like, he's like, enjoy your reefer if you want, I guess enjoy your sorcery. Like straight up. And I was like, you know, by all biblical definition. Yep.
Yes.
Yep. I can see where you're saying that. And if you're doing, and if you're saying it in that way, then yeah, that can definitely be something that can weaken you spiritually. That can be something that can put you into the mind frame of, let's say, leaving that spiritual window open for the lost boys to walk through.
Exactly right. So possession being the total abandonment of oneself, where there is a sense of covenant created. Yeah. Now, I don't say that just because of my research. I have field experience as well. I mean, I dealt with a murder case where the entity was a living being at one time, and he told his daughter, "I will kill you one day. I will kill you." He died. Then he possessed his granddaughter, and then the granddaughter killed the mom, which was this man's daughter. So, you know, it was an incredible case, but it taught me a lot about how these entities work. For some reason, they need human involvement. The case with the murder case, it included a 13-year-old girl, which was a daughter, and there was a 15-year-old girl that she knew from school. The 15-year-old girl could not get into the house, so she had the 13-year-old girl open the door about 2 o'clock in the morning. Now, here's a question, guys. We know for sure these entities can open their own doors, right?
Sure.
They can walk through them. We also know, according to Deborah Moffat's case and other case studies, that they can throw daggers. They can do anything. I mean, Malachi Martin died because there's a shadow figure that kicked a stool out from under his feet.
Yep. Yep.
So what this entity needed, though, was human cooperation. I can open my own door, but that's not really what I need. I need you to open the door for me.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a measure of consent going on. But again, I mean, even just the base level we're talking about, this is bending the rules of demonology as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is really stepping into their territory. Why do they need human cooperation? Why do they need that permission and covenant relationship for them to do what they're doing? And furthermore, how are they manipulating us to get that permission? That's terrifying.
Mm. And, you know, it's interesting that you bring up the term covenant relationship, because especially if you go back to at least ancient Judaic practice, things like that, to, quote, cut a covenant with someone was to literally, like, take an animal and sacrifice it and split it in half and walk between it and say, like, hey, yeah, the same thing will happen to me if we break this covenant.
Yes.
So
that's Abraham. That's very good. I love your knowledge about the Bible, man. This is intense. I love it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the stuff that, once again, like, it's there, people. It's not hard. Feel free to, like, read the footnotes, man.
Yes.
Read the little squiggly words at the bottom, not just the big red ones.
Yeah. You're exactly right. It should be that simple.
And
it's right there.
It's right there. And it's just phenomenal. Like we were saying in our pre-conversation, even in Leviticus, when they literally make this jump. And just so you know, folks, Leviticus is that book in the Bible in the Old Testament. That's the book of Judaic law. These are the books of how to ritualistically cleanse yourself before coming into temple. You know, you should not lay with a woman that's ritualistically unclean. You shouldn't lust after your aunt. You shouldn't be thinking about doing things with goats. Is in there, and then suddenly it just jumps the shark and goes like, oh yeah, and no necromancy. No cavorting with the spirits of dead people.
Exactly right. Yeah, oh man, this is getting good. And again, like I told you in the pre-interview, our rabbis in antiquity, we had no idea where that came from, right? Because, again, they're getting an antidote to a disease that they didn't even know existed.
Well, and
like, what are you talking about that? You know what I mean? Like, where does it come from?
What's interesting, though, is that the concept of disembodied souls re-embodying was not a foreign concept in ancient Israel.
Right.
It was very well understood. The idea of even reincarnation within familial line.
Yes, yes, yes.
Was just accepted. Like, it was almost the norm.
Yeah, and when we realize that when the authors of the Bible were writing these texts, they were aware of this.
Yeah, that's where the whole concept of sins of the fathers comes from.
Exactly right. Even when Paul, now we're getting into theology, which I never talk about, but
go ahead.
It's so interesting. Yeah, even when Paul's talking about Christ being buried with Christ, I mean, he's talking about ancient burial rites. And so if we don't get their funerary rites in context, then we don't know what he's talking about. I mean, we'll miss this point entirely.
Yeah.
Because their historical context of burial rites was you're going to be buried with your ancestor. And then you'll both be resurrected. Now, what's he talk about? He says that Jesus is our elder brother and we are buried with him. Why? Because he's saying we're buried with him to be resurrected with him. So my point is this. Forget about theology for a second. Let's look at the ancient historical contexts. That's what is the most fascinating aspect of my work, to me at least, because I think that even the UFO abduction phenomenon and demonology, both of these fields of study, they're all rooted in our understanding of the afterlife, period. Even demonology, if you go back to, again, the disincarnate consciousness and how people would go into houses, and it wasn't just touching a body that corrupted them, it was the consciousness that left that body that would fill them.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about with possession, and that's why the exorcistic rite of Catholicism works. We're not dealing with horns and hoes. We're dealing with consciousness, right? That's why it works. And so when we're dealing with the afterlife, we need to realize that Genesis 6 is playing right into the hands of what's happening right now in the UFO adoption phenomenon. So I'll stop, man, but it's getting deep.
let's go into that real quick, because I think once again the two go hand in hand.
Right.
Because it really is that concept of it could be good, it could be bad. It's the idea of the classic daemon, where it's your interaction of will that defines the actions of the daemon. I mean, go read any version of the Greater or Lesser Key of Solomon. That's precisely what it's about. Like, here's this favored son of God who was literally given command over the angels and demons.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
it's,
I think a lot of that, of course, goes into the ancient Hebrew concept of us being us being uniquely breathed into by the divine during creation, things like that. But let's get back onto the concept of demons and how they are infiltrating the world around us unbeknownst to us. Because like you're saying, even the modern concept of the UAP UFO phenomenon traces into this.
It does very heavily. And my best advice is I mentor a lot of people into this field. And I tell everybody that I mentor, first of all, we need to get rid of definitions for now. We need to get rid of descriptions. Like, not just descriptions, but making descriptions definitions, you know, because what happened to our ancestors that they would witness a famine. And then they would apply agency to what they were experiencing. So, you know, I'm not just hungry. Somebody authored this famine. You know, somebody meant for this famine to happen. And then they would say, well, that entity that authored this famine, he must be a demon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was that redhead kid that was born 3 weeks ago.
Right. Yeah.
Put him in the river. So,
exactly right. You got it, man. It's fascinating. You know, it's sad that our ancestors were that, you know.
My God, man. I thought you were talking about like last week on Twitter. I had no idea that you were talking about our ancestors. Because literally the mentality has not changed. It's just shifted.
It has not.
The tribal scared mentality of the 1500s and the specter of death has changed not one lick.
Right. And again, like, even, okay, let's look at the UFO abduction phenomenon.
Yeah.
We need to stop looking at apparitions in terms of, oh my God, it's a manta being, you know, it's a Nordic being, it's a gray. I don't think they're any of those. I think they're ghosts. I think they're translucent beings. And then even deeper than that, I don't really believe that they're going to manifest to us in terms of what they really look like. So I'm going to get very deep and I'm going to use some imagery here. I think the only apparition we can see of them is their behavioral patterns.
Interesting. Right?
What are they doing? What are they really after? Because, you know, even in my field of demonology, I work with women all across the world who are encountering the incubus spirit. I'm talking about, you know, I've worked with women who said that the incubus spirit would always come to them and try to make love to them. And then once they had a hysterectomy, the entity never visited them again.
So,
this gets deep, man. So what we're doing right now in demonology, it's the same questions we were asking 3,000, 2,000 years ago. I do not believe these entities, these incubi spirits or the UFO abduction, I don't believe that these entities are visiting our women for purposes of pleasure, because they're only visiting women who have the ability to procreate. Oh, this gets good. Very interesting. In terms of seducing them, there has to be a measure of procreation there.
Okay.
So why?
The only reason I can think of that there has to be a measure of procreation there is because nowhere in any religious text does it say that a demon is a fully spiritual being.
Correct.
As a matter of fact, just about all of them refer to the fact that they are driven sexually. Even the Watchers, according to the Nephilim history, you know, the whole reason and causation for the flood was their mating with human females.
Correct. Correct. Now, did they use their seed, or did they use human seed?
Oh, well, right. I mean, it never really says.
It doesn't. And so the incubi phenomenon is the same thing we've been dealing with in Genesis 6. Now, what's fascinating about this, Bob, is how, like, Father Sinistrari of Amino, he was a Franciscan priest, he had victims of incubi spirits. He would go into the homes an hour after the event taking place, and he would collect semen samples. Now, I'm going to suggest something that is very troubling. But when we get into the vampirology, we get into the folklore regarding vampires, before they sucked blood, these were necromancers who would go into graveyards and milk the carcasses of the recently deceased. Now, do you want to know what they were taking from the recently deceased?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay, semen and ovum.
And what would and that would have to be, like, of course, as we know by most modern science, fairly recently deceased, any of that to be viable, at least by our technology.
Exactly right. And so our ancestors, whenever somebody died, they'd bury them as quickly as possible. Matter of fact, by the way, that's also why your Watchers, oh man, this hit me like a brick when I first learned this. Your Watchers, that's mentioned in Genesis and in I think it was Daniel, they were mortal. What happened was our ancestors, even in Hebrew theology, their funerary rites say that they were also experiencing these entities that would go and milk the carcasses of the dead. So what they began to do is they would go out into the village or the city, and they would hire someone to watch the body of their recently deceased family member. They would leave for 7 days, and that watcher was in charge of watching that body and protecting it from other animals, other predators, and other spirits.
Which you would know what they were called? I myself am Cajun by upbringing and just old enough to have been at many traditional wakes where we accompanied the corpse through the night.
Yes, yes, yes. That's the original watcher. Oh, miss, getting good. Now I grew up in Christian theology, but my dad left that I guess understanding and went more into the messianic understanding of the Bible. And so that means that I got to meet a bunch of rabbis, you know. He went to what's called Hebrew Roots Movement. And so I literally, there's a guy I can call in Brooklyn right now. You know, he's Orthodox. And so, you know, I grew up with these teachings. I know what they teach. What's fascinating about this is that these watchers were forbidden to touch the dead body because it's called the forbidden touch. You'd be defiled by touching the body.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so then we have to ask ourselves what really, like, what sin did these watchers really commit in Genesis 6? Right.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't just touch. Remember what I told you about intimacy and how they're taking seed and ova? What were they doing? They were copulating with corpses.
Well, and you know, that would absolutely put itself right there, especially whenever you go into Numbers 13. Anyone who touches a dead body, the body of a person who has died, and does not purify himself, defiles the tabernacle of the Lord. And that person shall be cut off from Israel.
Yes, sir. So now what's fascinating about this is we are just now starting to see a behavioral pattern, right? And this is the behavioral pattern of a necromancer.
and let's define what that is, because a lot of our audience may not be, because number one, welcome to all of our new members. Welcome to all of our new members of alternative lifestyles in numerous ways. And I hope that you are enjoying this episode, because I want to dispel a lot of myth. That's the whole reason I do this show, is to dispel people's misunderstandings and for people to think that, like, Satanists are out there, like, trying to find their cat and stuff like that. Like, not the case. And it's a, you know, it's naivete on their part and you know, I guess to an extent, ignorance to the fact. And I think a lot of people misunderstand and are ignorant of what we're talking about here regarding demons, things like that. Once again, the fact that they have not only the power, but the right to be whatever we like. It's straight up Gozer the Destroyer. Like,
you choose
the form of the Destroyer. It might be Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. You know,
or Mickey Mouse, you know, when we have kids that are being abducted and they're witnessing Mickey Mouse in the abduction, they're not Mickey Mouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Well, or even it's people whose will is being abducted through horribly means like alcohol, hard drug addiction, things like that.
Right.
Where the world may write off the fact of like, you chose your horrible path. Yes and no, sometimes.
Exactly. Very good point. Very good point. You know, you're exactly right. One thing that I will suggest to you, because you know, I know you have a background in theology too. Have you ever read Ezekiel chapter 13 and how it plays a role in the UFO abduction phenomenon?
Yes.
Soul hunters, those who hunt the souls of men to make them fly. We're dealing with necromancers. Not just necromancers that will go out and dig a body up, but we're talking about entities that will kill someone to harvest their consciousness.
Well, and you've mentioned that a couple times, the disembodied consciousness, the idea of which is of course one of the caveats against sorcery, things like that.
Correct.
Even the idea of strong drink being in the realm of sorcery, other things that are imbibed by ancient cultures and modern being a form of sorcery. All of those things are something which can take you perhaps to a place that you may not be necessarily cognizant of all that is actively surrounding you.
Yeah, yeah. And in demonology, especially with your witch era literature, we would call that scatology.
Mm.
Now, scatology was what you would drink. It would change. It would alter your mind. It would alter your consciousness. Something that you would actually anoint yourself with. Hello, Hebrew theology, prophets. Yeah. That would alter their consciousness. And what we're really dealing with are entities that will intentionally place us as a species into a state of being, a state of dream, a state of sleep, where they will separate our soul from our body. Now, where I first got that from, this is very unique. I first saw that when I was reading a paper about Ezekiel 13. And I thought, man, I've been at church my whole life. You know, I thought, man, I knew a lot. I had a good grasp on Hebrew and Greek theology and all this stuff. And then I'm sitting there in my office and I'm holding this paper. My hands started shaking. I went, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Because Yahweh's at war with false prophets who have the ability to hunt the souls of men. Now, that's a different kind of evil, right?
Yeah.
The only evil we know now of are serial killers, and they're still obviously like the darkest, worst nightmare of Stephen King, right? They're awful. But these entities are different. They hunt the souls of men. Now, this gets back to Genesis 6.
Okay.
These, in Genesis 6, they were necromancers. Now, remember how I was talking about behavioral patterns and how that's really the only way we can understand them, or at least follow the footprints of their actions. Genesis 6 is not the only narrative or story about what happened, okay? Neither is the Book of Enoch. Matter of fact, the Book of Enoch is the least accurate, I should say. I know Michael Heiser is going to kill me. I know he will. I love Heiser. Love you, Heiser, for looking at it. But I'm going to say, all right, listen, man, I'm going to say this much, okay? There are other, they might not be as authoritative, right, with respect to what, you know, Christians think, but other texts have much more of a handle on their manifestations, right?
Yeah.
Now, one of them is the Apocryphon of John. It's a Coptic manuscript preserved by Egyptian monks.
Yep.
They give a description that's a lot alike, Genesis 6 in the Hebrew Bible, but it's more specific. It says that these entities waited until the husbands of the wives were absent. Like, they went to get a beer, they went to go shopping, they went to get food, whatever.
Yeah.
But then these entities manifested to these wives in the image of their husband. Oh, wait a minute. That's when my ear turned up. I went, oh, my God. Then they groomed these wives into intercourse. Now, we have to remember, these women thought they were making love to their husband, right? They thought they were making love to someone they're in covenant with.
Wow.
But they weren't. Because you know theology. You don't know exactly. I'm telling you, you're going to hear Paul screaming in the darkness right now if another angel comes to you with what, right? Another gospel.
Yeah.
Another spirit. Oh, man. All right. I'm getting triggered, dude. Because you know how rare it is for me to talk to somebody, I guess, that knows a lot about theology? It's fascinating, man. I'm telling you. We definitely got to go bowling.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Because, I mean, and I've got that part up right now from Ezekiel talking about
let's dive into that real quick.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You ready? Okay. Woe to the women who sew magic bands on. What do you mean, magic bands? All wrists and make veils for the heads of persons of every stature. Now, do you want to know the interpretation of persons of every stature? Those are your giants of Nephilim.
Hmm. And the, right. The who sew magic bands on all wrists. That almost sounds as though you are cutting a pagan covenant, as though you were doing a hand fasting.
Now, what's fascinating about this, oh, man, it's going to blow your mind. when you get into that text, what you realize is what they were doing was cutting pieces of flesh off of their victims and then sewing it onto what's called the social skin. Now, let's get back to real quick. Keep having it up there. This is incredible. Let's go back for a moment to why these entities of Genesis 6 manifested to women in the image of their husbands. They were performing a necromantic ritual. So what happened was, at the moment of conception, they stared into the eyes of these female victims, and then they reversed their apparition to what they originally looked like. Oh my wow. God, they're ghosts. Right? So here's why. They had, it's called an obstructic tradition. Obstructing is just a reference to childbearing and fertility. They believed that whatever man the woman was focused upon at the moment of conception, she will birth the material image of as a child. Right? What are we dealing with here? We're dealing with apparitions that are creating bodies that look like themselves. I am a ghost. I want a body that looks like me. Now we're going to find it in Ezekiel 13. I will also tear off your veils and save my people from your hands. I see where you will no longer be in your hands. Let's pray. And you know that I am the Lord. Now let's see here. Now we're going to deal with right now. We're going to deal with the currency of consciousness. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to go to verse 18. Woe to the women who sew magic bands on all wrists. Okay. And make veils for the heads of persons of every statue. Now, I need to give – this is interesting. When we're talking about blankets, pillowcases, and veils, it's the same Hebrew word for skin.
Huh.
Now, watch this. This is going to absolutely blow your mind. What is he talking about? Remember how I told you that they're creating social bodies, social skins? They're creating babies that look like their apparitions?
Yeah.
That's what – yeah. So then he says I will
no longer see deceitful visions or practice divination.
No. Right. Now, also, watch this. This is incredible. He's talking about seeing divination, seeing deceitful visions.
Yeah.
Why? He's referring. See, God remembers. Y'all remembers. He's referring back to Genesis 6. You came to these people in the image of, oh my God, ready? The image of a covenant.
Yeah.
All right, now let's see here. Will you capture the souls of my people? Here we go now. This is the currency of consciousness. But keep the souls of others alive for yourselves.
That is...
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, verse 19. For handfuls of barley and pieces of bread, you have profaned me to my people to put to death... Some who should not die. Now, hear it right here. It is. Some who should not die to keep others alive who should not live.
Wow.
That is the currency of consciousness.
The
killing.
And oh, necromancy.
Yes, sir. Oh, my Lord.
Like, that is straight up. The definition of necromancy,
right.
Not only to consort with the dead, but to bring them to life.
Does that shook me to my core. I thought, oh my
yeah.
God. Like I said, I'm in my office. I put the paper down and I called my dad. I said, yeah, we got a very big problem. Very big problem. Because he's not just acknowledging the fact that they can do it. Right. He's acknowledging that they can do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I'll shut up.
Well, and just the fact that there it is, like, you have profaned me to my people and put to death some who should not die. Like,
so
they basically did this in God's name.
Yes.
In the guise of somebody there to help them, as is oddly their... I guess, quote, cosmic right, as Damon to be
claiming.
Either helpful or hurtful.
Yes.
Deceive at will.
Dude, it's wild. I'm, you know, it's very rare, like I said, that I could talk to somebody who has that kind of theological background and degree where you understand this. But what we're dealing with here is a species that uses us to self-replicate.
Yeah.
They use our women. And not only that, but they're here to help us.
Well, and I mean, even God says, like, right there, by lying to my people who listen to lies.
Yes, so now there's a translation.
He definitely knows the fact that we are prone to be led astray.
Of course. That's why he said, you shall not make any graven image. Why? Because these entities will manifest as that image.
Well, and that's interesting. Let's go into that for a minute, yeah. Because that's something that I think a lot of people have kind of forgotten. And don't get me wrong, I got pictures all over the place. I got pictures up on screen. But one of the things that we talk about a lot on this show is intent.
Right.
And the idea that, you know, for instance, I'm no fan of the former president, things like that. But before he was elected, there was a coven of witches nationally who were like, we're going to put a hex on Donald Trump. And it's like, isn't that whole concept like do no harm to others?
Yeah, they don't really.
Or
yeah,
it'll be revisited on you like threefold, you know. And then later on, it was like, this didn't take, so we're gonna do it again. It's like, yo, man, calm it down. And then like COVID happened. It's like, calm it down.
That's interesting, isn't it? Oh my God!
One of my favorite scenes in any movie, one of my favorite movies hands down ever, is The Exorcist. I love that movie.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite pieces of trivia is that Pazuzu, the demon who possesses Reagan in that movie, comes to her as through a spirit board in the basement as the spirit Captain Howdy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Howdy.
And yeah, like she brings her mom down to show her this game that she found in the base. She's like, oh, we used to play this when we were kids. It's just a game. She's like, no, you need to meet Captain Howdy. And that was, you know, it's kind of that idea of she gave that consent, totally deceived into giving that consent. But she gave that consent to demoniac possession.
Exactly right. And usually they always approached you in terms of like, I'll help you. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And getting back to idolatry, that's what Yahweh's talking about. Now, I want to make sure everybody understands this. You know, because I do shows and people say, man, you talk a lot about the Bible. You didn't talk about Mesopotamia. When you're reading the Bible, you're reading Mesopotamian texts.
Yeah.
I mean, even there, you know, a lot of people know that, but it's necessary to understand that before we dive into these texts, because the authors of these passages, they inherited, it's called migratory loan words and migratory concepts. So the Hebrews were a migrant, like they migrated. And so they would pick up concepts and different ideas of demons wherever they were at.
And they were also enslaved by no less than three local cultures for millennia.
Exactly right.
For millennia.
Exactly right.
So in addition to their culture, they adopted their belief.
Right. And so I just want to make sure that there's not a listener out there who says, you know what, all you guys are talking about is the Bible. Well, you know, get bigger. We're getting bigger.
Yeah.
You know, we are bigger right now. It's just you have to realize how big we are in terms of the text that we're discussing. But like, look what Yahweh did. Okay, let's look at idolatry. In biblical antiquity, they had familial gods. And so what happened was, this is where possession comes from and all that stuff. But what happened was when somebody died in your family, they would, you know, they would bury their family member underneath the house. And it's called intramural burial. And then they would create a metallic image of that ancestor. And the consciousness of that ancestor would possess the image.
Yeah.
Now, here's why Yahweh said, don't make an image out of me. Why? Because something else will possess that image.
Yes.
And this gets interesting too. I'm sorry. I know you're going to say something. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I was going to say that goes directly back to the Kabbalistic concept of the golem. It goes straight into the Kabbalistic and magical concept of the Ergrigor, which is basically the golem on a societal level, where a group of people are putting their intent into something, which is where coven, even where mass and things like that come from, and the concept of intended prayer by a group. So, I mean, all these things are echoes of each other, and it's just one of those, like, if people don't see it, I'm sorry for your narrow, focused view.
You're right.
Because it literally is that, and no fault to him, because I'm definitely one of those people that there are moments in life where I am a horse with blinders on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you put me in my element of 10,000 people at a conference, I'm a horse with blinders on, man. My focus is on work. You put me in that same situation without blinders, and it may not be the fun experience of your carriage ride.
You might not have a good time. You know what I mean? Where you are.
And the thing is, a lot of people don't understand that the whole purpose, like you're saying, behind the have no graven image is because it would act the concept of the golem, whether you intended it to or not.
Because of the fact
that you or a group of people had this intent toward that, it could draw some other wandering spirit to it to embody it, and then say, do this bidding. Sir. And all you know is that it's trading on the dollar bill of God.
Exactly right. And that's why he said they're false prophets, right?
Yeah.
And this is interesting too. This is also why your UFO abductees are not seeing the historical Jesus. We don't have an image of him. They're seeing a white Swedish Presbyterian blue-eyed blonde-haired Jesus that never existed, but only in their minds. What that means is they're plucking our idolatry out.
Yeah.
Oh, this gets deep, man. We got to do another show.
Well, oh no, like shows and shows and shows, because this is it. This is quite literally something. Yeah. And we had a comment actually a little while ago from one of our listeners, James Dancer, and guest. Hey, James. When a fish sees a scuba diver, it doesn't see what we actually look like. Same thing with us and demons.
Exactly right. That is fat. Thank you, James. That's brilliant. He's exactly right. It's troubling. Again, what they're doing is they're conforming to our beliefs and we're tapping into it. So I think that's that consent aspect of it, right? Where's that covenant begin?
Well, and we're really giving it consent by default. We're giving it consent, but and it's shameful and it's horrible to say it, folks, but you're giving it consent by hope.
yes, exactly right.
Well, it's almost so defeatist to say, and I'm not saying that there is no reason to pray, that there is no God, that the demons have won, run. That's not what, not what I'm saying, because you can't run. They're demons.
You said, it's not because we have hope, you just can't run, right?
There is no hope. But that's what we're saying here, Nathaniel. What we're saying is that we give, it's almost that Freddy Krueger concept of we give it the power that we give it.
We do. I had somebody that contacted me last year. It's a girl from India. She's like 28 years old. She told me, she said that, she said she's been with 8 different men in her life, and she said this entity has manifested in the image of every one of those lovers.
Wow.
Right? What's it doing? They're looking to self-replicate.
Number one, you have to consider, these things lived far beyond when we did.
Yes.
They've been here much longer than us. Be here much longer than us. Why the need to replicate?
Well, I think they're recruiting dead people. I think that, again, if we look at history,
it doesn't sound freaking creepy at all.
Yeah, right. No, I'm telling you, it's the worst. I'm telling you, it's an apocalyptic species of evil. But again, if we're looking at apparitions that need a body again, of course they're going to do what they're doing. Of course they would pick out people who can reproduce. right? Like I said, like they're not going to men that are sterile and collecting semen samples. They're going to men that can actually procreate. And so, like, you know, the theory that has long been in the minds of demonologists was, okay, you know, do they have their own seed? Or, you know, do demons have their own seed? I don't think they do. Not at all. You know, the law in the Bible was that every species, you know, it creates what it creates. It self-replicates. You know, you can't mix seeds. Even farmers don't mix seeds. It was when it's in the Torah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you aren't going to end up with, like, a rhino and tiger mix by nature.
Right. Exactly right. Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And so what they're doing, I think, is it's far darker than that. My research lately has led me to believe that they're not just, you know, have you ever heard of the missing fetus syndrome, first of all?
I have, but I've heard of a lot of wild things.
Okay.
let's just say my ranch is an ankle breaker with all the rabbit holes that are on the property.
I see what you're putting down. I'm picking up with you.
I mean, that's one of the many topics that I've been wanting to do a specific episode on, things like that. The whole concept of like the harvesting of adrenochrome.
Yeah. We could do a show on that too. I mean, I'm not saying that, like, I'm just saying that, you know, it's very rare that I get on a show with somebody who really, really, really like this is a vibe, right? We can go anywhere with this. So that's what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
I mean, we could do but with the missing fetus syndrome, man, which I've been on shows with people where the hosts have had this happen before, where these entities will appear to them in a dream. It's just like the Dubuque phenomenon in the 16th century. And they will, they're thinking they're having intercourse in the middle of a dream. Like, it's just fake, right? And it's not. It's real. And then they become pregnant. And we're throughout history, we've been dealing with marriages that have had problems, right? So they're not intimate. And then somehow the woman's pregnant. And then they lose the baby. Either the baby dies in the womb or the baby completely disappears. Like, there are women right now that are going to the doctor, like, for, like, gynecological issues, and the doctor does, like, a test and stuff and an ultrasound and says, you know what, you have birth tissue in your afterbirth, and you have, like, you know, like, scar tissue. Like, you know, you don't have a kid, do you? No, I don't.
Yeah.
Now, there's a documentary that's out there. It's called The Extraordinary Seeding. You need to watch that because this is what I'm talking about.
All right.
So now what I'm dealing with now in my research, and this is literally, like, to date – what I'm thinking is that they're not just harvesting babies, right? They're not just inseminating women and then taking the baby out of them. I think that they're taking consciousness out of the baby. I think they're two steps ahead of us.
Now,
which would go back.
Because let's get back to this. This is probably, I'd say, at least a handful of times now that you have mentioned this concept of disembodied consciousness, and I really want to explore that because crack the nut of it, because I think that it's something that not a lot of people consider. I've been wanting to have whenever John McAfee died, kind of off topic but not quite, one of our guests, Dr. Robert Duncan, mentioned that, oh man, my friend John McAfee died. I don't know who I'm going to have my ongoing conversation about a firewall for the human brain with. And even now, there are articles right now, I've posted them on Dudes and Beer, about advertisers wanting to reach into dreams. Now, I'm one of those people. I do. You can see right here, I got screens. I'm looking at a screen. There's a screen here. There's a graphic screen here. Like, I got screens everywhere, my friend. But I do not have one in my bedroom. And I refuse to. And that's because, I do a lot of dream work, have specifically in the last year restarted my dream work of intended meditation, going to sleep, kind of walking down a path looking for an answer, you know, kicking rocks up, things like that. And that's good things. That could be bad things, you know. No different than playing around with a Ouija board. What's your intent? But the question is, are you leaving windows cracked? Are you leaving things Correct. Open? So because I do work like that to begin with, I tend to be pretty livid in my dream, but I don't have that opportunity for something to sneak through. And for centuries, it's not until like actually almost post-depression era worldwide that people stopped covering mirrors
right,
after correct. A death in a family. And mostly right. because like viewings, things like that, where that wake happened in the familial environment. You know, you were being buried at home, stuff like that, right. where like there was a block of ice in the living room and people came by for a few days and visited, things like that. But I think a lot of people have lost track of that idea and maybe have perhaps given a bit of consent over, you yeah. know, yeah. whether it be hanging out with your phone face up at night, what have you.
Right.
How much does that come into play? The familiar means of that connection with the other side, whether we intend it or not.
You know, with the mirror thing, it's very interesting. It's one of my mentors is Dr. Michael Lynch.
Oh, wow.
And in my mind, yeah, he's, oh my God, he's a legend, dude. And he was telling me about some of the experiences that he had in, you know, doing investigations. And he told me, he didn't know I was reading this ancient text at the time, but he told me about the mirror. And he said that the reason our ancestors would cover the mirror is not because they were trying to get rid of the ghost. It's because that the ghost, when it looked at itself in the mirror, would realize it was dead.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. So the text I was reading was an ancient Lemishtu text. It's a demonology text. It was about how Lemishtu, again, the behavioral pattern, she would manifest to women at night and then stare into their eyes and then take their baby. This is UFO abduction.
Yeah.
And so what they begin to do as an amulet, a religious amulet, a way of defense, is they would create small mirrors and place it underneath their heads just in case to confuse Lemishtu.
Well, even the idea crazy, of feng shui right? mirrors.
Yeah.
Or not feng shui, qigong. Where it's the little mirrors that you put at the window, stuff like that to repel the demons from coming in.
Exactly.
And these ideas go back across cultures.
Exactly.
That's what's absolutely amazing. And even the idea of demons being so narcissistic that they are attracted to a mirror, or not even demons, but spirits. Like you said, the whole right. idea of covering the mirror was so that the spirit of that person in the house would not stay.
Yes,
they would move forward. Go.
Yeah.
Go out of the other places. Don't get distracted by your own self. Don't get scared of the other side because you see yourself as dead.
Right.
You know,
it's fascinating, man. It's fascinating. You know, it's such an in-depth conversation. You know, I mean, a lot of these, what I really enjoyed about this interview, man, is we can go anywhere. Like I'm talking to somebody who can go anywhere intellectual with me and we can like, you know, hang out.
Well, I thank you very much. I greatly, greatly appreciate that. And I mean, we will let you go. I know it's typically an hour. Are you good with a little bit more time?
I gotta go.
Okay.
Not a problem at all. I got something else.
Because we definitely want to have you, like I said, back again and again. And yes, we do typically, but yes, we are typically kind to our first time guests as far as like, yep, we'll keep you an hour.
Oh man, next time we're going to do it too. I guarantee you.
But I guarantee you, we will have you on again. For those of you that have been ringing off on this, thank you so much. Before we let you go, time for shameless self-promotion. We have your stuff up on screen, everything else. I know you, much like us, are in the midst of full-on rebrand. So
I am.
Let everybody know where they can go to, other than, of course, the Dudes and Beer store, to find your book, everything else.
So, you know, I am in the middle of rebranding. My website is njgillis.com, but don't go there right now. Like I said, it's down. I'm rebranding. Me and my agent, we're still trying to figure out, you know, my research is so expansive. Do I want to identify as just a demonologist? Right. Or is there something else that I can stretch myself into?
Yeah.
It's weird, you know?
Yeah.
We don't have the vocabulary yet. But that's my website. And then I'm also on Instagram and Facebook as the Nathaniel J. Gillis. You guys can find me there. Yep. And, you know, yeah, that's where I'm at. Bub. And it's been an honor to be on with you guys. I really enjoyed myself.
It has been more than an honor to talk with you this evening. Thank you so much for taking the time. I'm sure that we will have numerous conversations, not only on the air, but outside of it as well, because there is so much happening in the news that is just like straight up this. It's mind-numbing, not even mind-blowing.
It's terrifying. It's crazy,
please,
man.
Do, Nathaniel, hold the line while we close things out with our audience.
While
you are online checking out the amazing book, A Moment Called Man, as well as the work and other interviews with Nathaniel Gillis, make sure to stop on by the Dudes and Beer podcast. That's where you can find all of our content. That's where you can find everything that we do. Make sure to stop on by Curious Realm, curiousrealm.com. Google it now. Do it. I control your mind. Google Curious Realm. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Remember, if you can't be good, be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service.
Download the free app.
Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. And until next time, drink responsibly.